From gender and sexuality to race and socioeconomic status, I'll be talking to some of the most inspiring people in the industry, alongside the voices of today's youth, as we unpack identity through the lens of fashion. I'm Sachin Bola, and this is Fashioning Identity. In this episode, I'm looking at gender and considering fashion's role in constructing and deconstructing gender identity, recognizing the diversity in gender and how people express theirs by how they look, and whether or not fashion has the power to change people's ideas about gender. Before exploring the relationship between fashion and gender, I wanted to define what gender is, which, even for academics, isn't black and white.
So the difference between gender and sex, we used to just divide up very simply and say sex is the body, gender is the cultural and political interpretation of the body. So there is a fleshly sexed body. It's a boy, it's a girl. And then there was gender ideology that molded that flesh into something very specific and recognizable. We don't really totally believe that anymore, partly because of the work that Judith Butler did. And Judith Butler reminded us that when we go to a baby's body and say it's a boy or it's a girl or it has ambiguous genitalia, we are already in the grips of a gender ideology. And therefore, she said, sex was gender all along.
That was Jack Halberstam, a professor of English and gender studies at Columbia University. He spent nearly 25 years writing about gender, queer, and popular culture. He joined me in Heisenbeide's recording studio in New York City.
That was quite a controversial claim, and it is still contested by some people in the trans community. But at any rate, we recognize that gender ideology is completely framing how we understand the flesh.
So it's more of a construct that's constructed by society.
It's a construct to the extent that if you recognize that some 2% of the population is born with ambiguous genitalia, you can see that it's a construct by the way that we insist that a baby be a boy or a girl. And some scientists have said there are five genders or five sexes, and some people have said many more than that. And we're now living in an era where places like Facebook have a ridiculous number of ways that you can identify yourself. So we actually recognize that the palette for the expression of gendered identity is very broad. But we still, even, you know, in academia, in gender studies, there's still a struggle with what the meaning of the material of the body might be and whether there's anything that comes before gender ideology or exceeds gender ideology. But you're absolutely right to say that all of it is understood as a social construction.
Whereas sex is more of a biological understanding.
Sex is biology, but it's biology that's already been seen and crafted through the lens of gender ideology.
To put all of this into the context of fashion, I was quickly reminded of an observation I made not long ago while eating lunch. A slender-framed person in high-heeled boots and wide-leg trousers entered the room. At first glance, they appeared female. But at second glance, features like light facial hair suggested he's, well, he. What interested me wasn't this person's appearance, but everyone else's reaction to them. They stared and were confused, and understandably so. None of us could say what this individual's sex is, that is to say, identify them as male or female based on their genitalia. And none of us could tell you how this person chooses to label their gender identity without asking. But what we did notice was their appearance, their gender appearance, which is something we might use to correctly or incorrectly identify one another's sex and gender identity.
Misrecognition or confused recognition of gender happens every day in many different places. It can happen very publicly in a restaurant with a fabulously dressed, gender-ambiguous person, as you described, or it can happen in a women's restroom where somebody using the women's restroom doesn't immediately present as female. If you have very short hair and you're not wearing feminine clothing, should you be in this restroom? Clothing is is so important, precisely because the culture kind of recognizes that some of the divisions that we've claimed are natural between male and female are actually very, very arbitrary. And so because we don't walk around in the world naked, we are actually not gendering each other on the basis of genitalia, despite the fact that we still believe that genitalia is the basis of gendered identity. Almost no one that you meet in your everyday peregrinations around the city presents themselves to you as a gender in terms of their genitalia. So because we're not naked, clothing has to do a lot of the work of signification.
Clothing, fashion, and our overall way of presenting ourselves is a language, a nonverbal language. And this language is socially and culturally shaped. When Kanye, Jaden Smith, and A$AP Rocky wear a skirt, most of us think they're cross-dressing because they're wearing a women's garment. And how we react to that, and how we define what is men's clothing and what is women's, is further influenced by place and time. For example, the lungi in South India and the sarong in Indonesia, both of which resemble skirts in the Western world, are worn by both women and men. This doesn't just highlight differences in cultures when it comes to gender norms for clothing, but shows that clothing inherently has no gender. It's shaped by culture.
In Euro-American culture, going all the way back to like the 16th century, I believe, there are what were called sumptuary laws. And these laws determined how people should dress on the basis of class and gender in particular. That gets carried forward into the 20th century when, up until the 1950s maybe, maybe into the 60s even, it was considered a crime for a person of one sex to be on the street without at least three items of clothing that belong to that sex. So these clothing laws have been, you know, really unevenly enforced, mostly on queer populations, obviously, but they make it very clear that there is such a thing called cross-dressing and that in certain circumstances, cross-dressing is illegal. So we have managed what is actually a very slippery set of determinants about what constitutes masculinity and femininity according to quite strict clothing regimes.
Why are we so fixated on putting people into boxes?
In academia, you know, some 20 years ago in the movement that was then called postmodernism, people started noticing that the whole world is sort of divided into binaries, which roughly correspond to a kind of good-bad morality as well. But there are also racial binaries, there are class binaries, and these binaries... A binary is a very simple unit of social recognition, and it allows you to say, if not A, then B, if not B, then A. That's why we use them. It has very little to do with what the actual body is or what it registers as or what it needs in terms of a kind of social or political template. Binaries are there for the purposes of simple recognition within complex societies. And so the more we push on binaries in a way, the better, because when you release people of binary assumptions, they're forced then to take in much more complicated phenomena and do other things with it.
It's when individuals and institutions challenge gender binaries that we begin to see change. But what is fashion's role in all of this? I invited Dr. Valerie Steele, a fashion historian and the director and chief curator at the museum at FIT, to our studio to dig deeper into the connection between fashion and gender. Can you share some memorable moments in history when fashion challenged traditional gender norms?
Well, if you look just at Euro-American culture, you can see that in the Middle Ages, you move from a shift from two kinds of long robes to something which is more bifurcated for men. In other words, it's not pants yet, but it's the kind of tights, like men in tights, and then for women, a long robe. So you get this whole idea that evolves into the idea that pants are for men and dresses are for women. And this is something which takes a very long time, and actual struggle for women to get the right to wear trousers. I mean, I'm old enough that in my high school, we actually went on strike for the right to wear trousers, at least when it was a really cold day in the winter.
Who are some of the most memorable designers associated with challenging gender and fashion?
Yves Saint Laurent was very, very important. It's not that he was the first person to put women in trousers, but he made it so central to his aesthetic and started doing it a lot from 1967 on. Now, you'd had some women in trousers in the 20s and 30s, and designer Chanel wore trousers, though it's not clear she was making them for clients in the 20s and 30s. But Saint Laurent really made this a part of an explicit idea that he wanted to dress women so that they could face the world and be powerful in the daytime and yet also be seductive at night. I mean, the whole French thing. Jean-Paul Gaultier, in a way, was more radical because he confronted this hostility to the idea of effeminacy in men and started saying, well, what about men in skirts, men in kilts, men in sarongs, men in you know, brassieres and corsets and all kinds of things that are hyper associated with femininity and indeed with erotic femininity. I think that women in men's clothes have become more accepted because masculinity is the norm and it's the thing you aspire for, you know, pants equal power. But what does a dress equal? Oh, in a way, it's a kind of weaker symbol.
Dr. Steele's commentary on effeminacy in men is an excellent yet deeply troubling example of the relationship between fashion and gender. When a man appears effeminate, we usually think of that as a gay thing and as something to be ridiculed. Because it's generally okay for a woman to wear a suit but not okay for a man to wear a dress, that's not so much a gay thing as it is an eye-opening reflection of what society, men in particular, think of women. After all, what's so wrong with women?
People always say that fashion reflects society, which I hate that word because it implies a kind of vulgar Marxism that there are real things in society like the economy and then there are fluffy ephemeral things like fashion that just reflect. Fashion's a part of society. So as society changes, fashion changes with it. But also fashion can accelerate change.
Do you think that fashion has the power to change people's beliefs about gender and expectations of gender appearance?
I think fashion has the power in conjunction with other things, such as an individual's personal courage to change people's minds. Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, the classic example of all the drag queens at Stonewall, you know, who sort of fought back at the police and said, you know, here we wear our hair in curls and we're fighting back. I think that that kind of thing, it's the clothing, but it's the clothing in context, who's wearing it and under what circumstances and what's the message they're trying to get across. Although we tend to think we accept our fashion rules from looking at celebrities and looking at magazines, in point of fact, most of the time it's from looking at other people that we see in our lives and on the street.
From laws enforcing how men and women should dress, to designers using the runway to question norms, the dialogue between fashion and gender is a long-running one. But where is it today? If fashion is a part of society that changes along with it, what can fashion tell us about society? Does the rise of gender-ambiguous fashion, say, Maison Margiela's tabby boots, indicate that our culture's enforcement of gender norms has loosened up? And can fashion really change people's understanding of gender identity? To find out, I turn to a few people who experience a lot of this on a daily basis because of their gender-bending style. The first is Ian Isaiah, a musician who, along with Shane Oliver, run Hood by Air, one of the most influential fashion streetwear brands and one that promotes gender-neutral clothing. How do you define genderless?
Genderless to me, because, you know, there's, I guess, Wikipedia's definition that the millennials cultivated, but I'm just going to talk about me. Genderless to me means no titles, no overheads. You're an open book. This is not just sexual. This is mentally, you're just an open book. You receive, you take, you give. You're free to express yourself in any port you choose. If that becomes apparel, you do that to the max. if it becomes the tone of your voice, you do that to the max. If it just becomes your attitude, you do that to the max so that no one can actually define you. That's what I mean genderless is. Getting upset because you really have to pee and you go in a restaurant and not waiting for a female to come out the bathroom because you're genderless and going to the bathroom to use it because, you know, there's no titles on you. You're respectful. You respect all. You see the difference. You also have a preference. You also have a sexual preference, but there's no title over you, you know. You're not going to Mr. or Mrs. me. I'm not going to go crazy and correct and grammatically correct people as I, you know, walk down the street. But just a sense of being yourself without someone else giving you a title, you know. I consider myself genderless, but I also consider myself still a male. You know, I'm still genderless because I'm accepted. You know, I accept all.
It's a state of mind.
It's a state of mind.
When did your style start evolving into this genderless expression?
Early 2000s. I was raised in Brooklyn, New York, me and my friends, obviously the family. And I guess before streetwear, before us, me, Shane, and before HBA got serious, before I even thought about being a designer or anything like that, styling was just what I knew from life experience, being West Indian from Trinidad, being in Brooklyn, just knowing that, like, our styling came from the streets and our family and, like, dance hall culture. And our first take on genderless in fashion, for me at least, was the early 2000s and late 90s in Brooklyn, just growing up in Brooklyn, wearing tight H&M clothes or like wearing what we saw on dance hall videos. There's like dance hall videos called Pasa Pasa, which is like legendary. And it's just like just dance hall culture and videos from Jamaica. It's basically Vogue.com, if you ask me. Growing up in Brooklyn, styling and mindset of music and fashion was literally Hot 97, Source Awards, that whole vibe that we were creating with hip hop and then mixing it with dance hall. And the hip-hop vibe, of course, was, you know, genderly bias. So, you know. And then we also had another genderly bias culture dance hall that was, like, hetero as fuck and still hetero as fuck. However, visually, the male in dance hall was wearing women's clothes and sexually, like, fucking, like, dry fucking during reggae. And we're like, this is... me, black, gay, young, in the hood, is like, wait, this is me. I'm wearing female clothes and I'm hanging out with straight people all day. And I'm accepted by them because they're like, okay, it's past the clothes. They're like, we're just going to hang because we know you, we're protecting you, I'm protecting them, and we're homies. And I was like, this is the same thing that's going on. And then I just grew and grew and grew. Same thing happened to Shane. We met after high school and he, same vibe, grew and grew and grew. And then, like, by then we're like in our 20s. So it's like, well, sis, what? Is this a job? And then we're like, well, maybe it is. And then boom, streetwear. But like, that's how, streetwear for us. That's, to me, that's how like the genderless and fashion thing kind of like came together in my head.
Those two still references, because both of those groups of hip hop and dancehall, like you said, are anti-gay
and hetero as fuck.
And then when you bring in the genderless fashion conversation, yeah, often people stereotype it as being a gay thing, and yet you were taking inspiration from this very straight culture.
Yeah, I started by testing it out in the hood. Basically, I started by just testing out being normal, being myself in the hood. Because if I got through the hood first, and the white girls and every other girls, fashion girls, or anybody in any sort of corporate meant nothing to me. It wouldn't matter if they tried to beat me down. I would be like, sis, this means nothing. So I tried it in the hood first. Shane was doing the same thing, hood by air. Like, and it's still to this day, even with my music and styling in general, like, if it's not supported by, like, my culture, which is my hood or the hoods that I know and hoods that I grew up in, because that's the attitude in general. Like, if it's not off their checklist, it doesn't work. And young, I would go from like playing ball in a sweatsuit with the boys to being like, I'm gonna go in the crib real quick and I'll be right out. And they're like, I'm going out tonight. They're like, okay, where you going? I'm like, you can't go. So like, I'm going out and I'll come back out in a poom poom skirt. And the same hoodie or something like that, you know. And, of course, jokes it'll go from jokes, and they're not going to, like, be like, oh, we're going to knight you because you look great. But from the jokes to just being comfortable, because to them it's like, you know, they don't want to be seen walking around with, like, a tall giant in a pom-pom skirt without being looked at like they was crazy or gay or titled, blah, blah, blah. But that acceptance that I got from them is what gave me the courage to, like, it's so weird that that acceptance from, like, the hood gave me the courage to come to Soho when I was younger and do the same thing, even though, like, coming to Soho, I wouldn't care if I was judged because I'm like, well, so, ho. So, like, I wouldn't care if I was judged and stuff like that. So, like, that gave me the confidence. That's actually all I needed, was that confidence from, like, the hood to be accepted, because I knew later on, I'm no fortune teller, but I knew later on if I could get them to accept me, I can also get them to change their vibes and their looks and clean up their looks and, like, switch streetwear culture to something else, you know?
Let's talk about the acceptance from the hood. Mm-hmm. You talked about hanging around a lot of straight men.
Still do. Always.
I actually
still only hang out with straight men, which is weird.
So when you're around your straight male friends,
yeah,
and you're doing your thing and your heels and your nails, what was their reaction? And
jokes. You look crazy. You actually don't look crazy. You look fire. Wait, this is, I could never do this look, but it actually looks good on you. This is nuts, but it looks smooth. It looks normal. Like, it was a lot of alternatives. After saying how they thought they felt, there was alternatives of them taking a second to be like, wait, but you actually look, I could never do it. That's what they would say. Like, I could never do it, but you look fire, this, that, and the third. And I would be like, is this the same thing that happened to, like, Little Richard? Is this the same thing that happened to, like, Luther Vandross? Or Dennis Rodman? It was just, I appreciated that. It was cool. It was an alternative after, like, a joke or something like that. And I, you know, of course the jokes kind of were a little weird, but, you know, you can't save everyone from being ignorant. You just have to show them a different way. And the jokes kind of stopped, and it just became like, I can't, but you look, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah? And then, like, I started seeing a transition in the hood, in hoods of people, like, transitions of shapes and, like, transitions in fashions. And I was like, well...
Well, then you brought it to Hood by Air.
No. Then after Hood by Air is when I started seeing the transitions.
After?
I think we were the ones to help. We were the ones to set the transition. And, we were the ones to set the transition. And then I knew for sure that I was like, okay, this is great. This is, like, it was more comforting knowing that, like, they put the money where their mouth is. Especially with, like, just, like, the retaliation, like, later on. Later on, it's in a year or two after, like, that. They just started, like, supporting.
Do you think that fashion can change people's ideas about gender?
It can help. I think it's a good 40-50%, sure. But you don't want to hide, once again, behind a mask or hide behind a look, because you want to be 100%. I mean, I would make sure that, like, just as much as that look is fab, the mind needs to be fab, too, so that you're cool. So that you're an influencer, maybe? Or so that you're just, like, a real person that somebody could look up to or something?
It was never consciously supposed to be challenging. I never consciously was like, I want to dress like this to challenge a system or to challenge a society. You know, like, I've just always been androgynous, is what I'm saying. I could wear a freaking potato sack, you know, and it's going to be androgynous. You know, so it was less challenging and more of me just accepting what was already there.
That was Shamir, a singer-songwriter whose music is as stylish as he is and has been featured in the soundtracks of Chanel shows. To get his take on fashion and gender identity, I got on the phone with Shamir, who took the call from his home in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You are not someone who's afraid to experiment with your appearance, especially when it comes to challenging what many associate with how a man should look. So tell me a little bit about your style.
I am very open with what I wear, whether it be men's or women's wear, because, I mean, both can fit me perfectly and both can like not work, you know? So I think I've basically been like, I have to shop in both in a weird way. For me, it just always seemed like no matter what I wear, whether it's all women's wear, all men's wear, that it's going to look androgynous. So I try not to think about, you know, whether it looks androgynous or not. I will wear only men's wear stuff and, you know, people still call me ma'am and, you know, and use female pronouns with me and everything. And I'm like, I'm literally wearing nothing but top man. Like, I don't understand, you know. So I guess I kind of, I guess not so much adopted, more just like stop caring and not putting myself in boxes, I guess you should say.
If fashion is a barometer of cultural shifts, then the rise of gender-neutral fashion and the visibility around it suggests a more progressive view on gender expression and identity, at least in major Western cities.
Like right now, I mean, obviously, I think one of the biggest inspirations, not just for me, but for everyone right now, right, is like Janelle Monáe. Like, I think she balances androgyny so well. Yeah, and I'm always inspired by it. And also, like, Billy Porter. Like, we have so much more representation now, which is, like, really cool. I didn't have that then, you know? I think it just gets better the more that it becomes normalized.
But despite fashion's role in reshaping how we think about gender identity today, Shamir notes that it's more than skin deep.
I had another interview where, you know, I was asked, and I was never asked about it in, like, this very kind of, like, serious, just straightforward way. It was like the first time I've ever been asked that. And it was like, what is it like being, you know, a Black queer non-binary person? In layman's terms, like very straightforward. And the main and first thing that came to my head and that I still kind of like agree to is this lonely. You know, in a very binary world, you know, you feel like an alien. You feel like the only fucking person that is like this.
I wanted to get a straight cis man's perspective on gender bending style because there's a lot fashion can tell us about the modern state of heterosexual masculinity. So I spoke to Jean Deleon, Heist and Bodies editorial director.
Clothing isn't necessarily gendered, right? And in the history of menswear and fashion, I mean, there's been a lot of straight copying, right? There's been a lot of LGBTQ culture starting trends. Like, let's say Frank Motchins from J. Crew was inspired to carry Red Wing boots in the stores because he saw lesbians wearing them in Chelsea. And then, of course, you know, when the metrosexual was around in 2003, that was when you saw these norms around masculinity beginning to shift and change, right, about the connotations of what it meant to be straight, what it meant to be gay. You know, self-care and grooming and looking good just became part of this identity of masculinity. If you are a quote-unquote real man, then you do take care of yourself. You do get your nails done every now and then. You have a grooming regimen, and you wear clothes that complement your body, right? And you pay attention to trends as they change. I mean, there's all these touch points in popular culture, but I think what it comes down to is as dressing well and being into fashion became normalized among men in society as a whole, then the people who were more interested in the avant-garde and the envelope pushers of straight culture overall always want to get weirder, right? That's what ASAP Rocky says, clothes get weirder.
On the flip side, for the guy who's hearing you say this and is thinking, well, that's gay or that's too effeminate, I would never wear a skirt. Kanye could get away with it, but I would never wear a skirt.
Right.
How would you address them?
I mean, you know, I wrote a profile on Karamo Brown, who is the culture expert in the new Queer Eye, right? And he's bringing something new to the table. I mean, I grew up watching the old Queer Eye when I was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, right? You know, what Karamo Brown does is the new sort of last frontier of masculinity, which is the internal makeover, right? He's getting men to be more introspective, to realize that it's okay to be vulnerable and more emotionally aware. And that even trickles down to, you know, the Nikes of the world. Like two of my favorite shoes of the year are the Sakai LDB Daybreaks, the Cactus Plant Flea Market. VaporMaxes and even the P6000, right? And the thing about the P6000 and the cactus plants is that those actually came in women's sizes. So for the longest time in sneaker culture, women would have to like figure out the math to see what their size was in men's. And I think now it's interesting that more and more guys are sort of trying to figure that out for themselves. Like, oh, well, if I'm a men's 9, what am I in women's sizing? And Nike's really spoken to that by making, you know, larger women's sizes that are really just men's sizes.
Do you see a lot of straight men wearing women's clothes outside of the celebrity world in your everyday life?
Oh, one of my favorite pants is actually from Christophe Lemaire's Uniqlo U collaboration, right? He has this amazing pair of wide leg trousers that are essentially like sweatpant dickies, and they're women's. And my girlfriend and I have the same pair, but, you know, when I wear it, it just looks like an item that I would wear. When she wears it, it looks like an item that she would wear. And I think, you know, again, at the end of the day, it's just a product that fits different bodies in different ways. And if it complements your body type, then it works.
You may remember seeing Ash Owens in street style roundups in the mid-2010s. Dressed in menswear, often in suits, with her long hair, she was a favorite among photographers. Today, she wears her hair short and says she shed that skin.
I feel very privileged, actually, because I was able to present very much as a, you know, traditional cis straight woman. And I think that's why I had a lot of press. And people were like, oh, cool, you're the woman with straight hair that wears suits. You're the straight woman who wears suits. I took a step back from being in, like, street style or being in photographs, and I felt very uncomfortable because I didn't really know that person in the photo. It wasn't 100% myself. And even though I was wearing a suit, it kind of just felt like armor. It felt like I was protecting myself from having to really fully be realized as who I am. And so, you know, there was definitely a part of me putting on a face in that time. I had so much that I was working out personally, and so for me, you know, the suits that I was wearing were like oversized. You know, I was wearing like giant coats and like hats, and you could barely see my face. And that was like what I wanted to, yes, question gender. And this has always been something that I've naturally been very drawn to, and didn't really fully realize why I wanted to question it so much and why it was something that was a point of conversation for me for many years.
Ash is the founder of Suited Magazine, a fashion and art publication, though today her focus is on making custom suits. She trained as a tailor and studied fashion design at Parsons, where her thesis was on menswear for women. For her, the connection between fashion and gender is her personal journey.
Everything I've done has been for this, really, in the way of like understanding who I am, understanding the conversation of culture and fashion and how it relates to impact. And I think that, you know, through that, I'm finally like ready to do what I've always wanted to do, which is to empower a lot of women or people who identify as women or people who identify as any fluid way that they want.
How far have we come with expressing our gender identities using fashion?
It's amazing how much pressure we put on each other in society with just what we're going to put on. In schools, you get teased if you wear something that other kids don't think is normal or think is right. As soon as you're different, you just stick out. And as soon as you stick out, you become a target. And I think that we now champion differences a lot better, I think, in society, at least in fashion culture and music culture. I think that we have rappers who are now openly gay, and we have people who like really aren't defined by a label and really can be a lot more fluid, that are out there as role models, which we didn't have when you and I were younger.
And what effect does that have on youth culture?
I actually mentor some kids right now, and it's actually like incredible to watch how fluid, open, cool, and like progressive and considerate of the environment, and just far more thoughtful than I was at that age, and far more thoughtful than I remember any of my peers being. And I think that I'm very much a chronic optimist, and I think that we are moving towards a future that is very genderless. And I think that kids are actually more in tune with that than adults. It's actually more disheartening or sad to see this continue in society in adults, and to see that, you know, there's still these people trapped in this box that they've been created, or people have created in the past for them, and they don't realize that that box is total bullshit, and they're stuck, and they're stuck in this. And instead of being able to break out, they just continually pass on this box to the people around them with that kind of hatred, and their children, and all of these different spaces that they're in.
You said that the future is genderless. Mm-hmm. What do you think fashion's role is in that?
I mean, fashion is going to have to catch up to where we are as people in a fast way, in many ways. And gender is just the, you know, the tip of the iceberg. And I think that it's, you know, we're going through a time where fashion's trying to catch up in understanding, you know, its classist history, its racist history, its sexist history, and all of these different systems that fashion's been playing into.
To consider what the future of gender identity looks like through the lens of fashion, who better to ask than today's youth? I spoke to a few people from the Hetrick Martin Institute, the nation's oldest and largest organization helping LGBTQ youth aged 13 to 24, to find out.
My name is Mercy Kelly. I am a youth leader.
Yes, hi everybody. I'm Jackie O. I am the arts and culture coordinator at HMI.
As for me personally, like, I think fashion is like very important, because I, as someone who identifies as a Black trans woman, I've been socialized to think that, like, when it comes to fashion, that, you know, like, it's very gendered. But I have like a personal belief that my money bought it, so it's not women's clothes, it's my clothes.
So a lot of our friends, I think one thing I've noticed is that when it comes down to fashion, yes, it is hard to find clothes in which the gender you are assigned now. I think that, especially a lot of trans folks, I know like trans women, it's hard for them to find like sneakers or like women's sneakers or whatever the case may be. And what usually happens is like they feed her,
right?
As a trans woman, or if you're a trans man, is it sort of, do you feel like the fashion industry isn't including you?
I have to be honest, I roll with people who know their power. So it's just like, we do not, like, we're not limited in that way, which is to say that other people are. But it's just like, I don't, like, for me, I already know I'm not particularly reflected in most fast fashion brands like Forever 21 or H&M, or like even like just like custom places. Like, I'm like, just like, I was so excited for like the Fenty collection, and it only goes up to a size 14 in US. I am like at least double that. So it's like, it's just not realistic for me. I'm not disappointed when I go shopping. It's just like, for me, I'm a person where it's like, I'm realistic. I shop for the body I have, not the body I want.
Do you think there's enough of a representation and a conversation about gender in fashion?
There's not a conversation around that. You know, like, it's just, this is what it is. And so now that we can look at folks and say, hey, like, oh, there's a person who's in this ad who's a person that's gender nonconforming. That's beautiful. But what is the conversation behind
the article.
So why do we have that one gender nonconforming person in the magazine? And why is this not a conversation of like, why don't we have more gender nonconforming folks in this magazine? Why don't we have more trans folks modeling clothes and items of that nature? And so I think that when it comes down to having a conversation, I feel like there needs to be a larger conversation. But I also feel like the people who identify with that conversation needs to be at the table. So it shouldn't be like, models and these fashion designers at the table, but people who are transgender, gender nonconforming, who say, hey, I've been in media before, but I've never had the platform to really be in media, right? Like fully in media, to be at that table and say, so how can we integrate ourselves in fashion in a way that is celebrated and affirmed and all of that jazz?
I just like to say to the brands, your inclusion and your ideas of diversity mean nothing if the people who are you're trying to target are not involved in the decision making.
Period.
For all the progress that's been made, why do a lot of people still only recognize two sexes? Some people are born with a mixture of male and female genitalia, intersexed. Some decide to change their sex at some point in their life, transgendered. And others prefer not to identify with either, non-binary. How do we expect them to look? How do they want to look? Jack Halberstam, who spoke at the beginning of this episode, is a transgendered man and offered his take.
That's a really tough question nowadays because in a trans community, there are people who, as we put it, go stealth. There are trans women who simply pass as women, and there are trans men who simply pass as men, and they look, for all the world, like normative men and women. But there's a whole subset of trans people who don't care whether they pass or not, and I would include myself as a trans masculine person in this category, where on any given day I will be sirred or ma'amed or, oh, sorry, I thought you were this and now you seem to be that, 15 times. And frankly, I just don't care. But lots of trans people are not dressing to pass. Lots of trans people are actually wearing all kinds of clothing that might make it even harder for you to figure out what that person's sex assigned at birth might have been. It is not the job of trans people to make it easy for non-trans people to figure out who they are. Trans people, like anyone else, want to wear what they want to wear.
For another take on trans people's experience with fashion, I spoke to Ian Alexander, who plays Buck on Netflix's The OA. Ian is the only Asian American transgendered actor on TV and has been a powerful voice for the trans community. I got on the phone with Ian, who took the call from Los Angeles, California.
Well, a lot of people are seriously miseducated about trans people, and they are always so fixated on, but what were you born as? But the whole idea of, being trans and using fashion to break down gender stereotypes and the binary is that, we want people to focus on the person and not the gender. Cis people definitely have a tendency to expect trans people to, not pass as their, correct gender, or, the complete opposite, where, they're like, oh, I couldn't even tell, which is not a compliment, by the way. I feel like a lot of people just have really misconstrued ideas about what trans people look like, and that there's, one specific type of trans person, which isn't true, because trans people are just regular people, and, regular people, everyone has different styles and tastes and life experiences.
I'm wondering, in terms of the fashion industry, outside of representation, just your experience shopping and your experience sort of trying to outfit yourself, what that's like for you.
So actually, I think it's great that you're asking this question, because no one's ever really acknowledged that before, except for, maybe some of my trans friends who were complaining, where do you shop? Because I can't find any jeans that fit me. And where did you get your shoes? And the great thing about the internet is that you can find brands that are geared towards transmasculine people, or you can ask for advice online, which I think is great. It's always a struggle to find things that I like that fit me. So most of my clothing style is oversized, just because that's the only clothes I can find, because not everyone knows how to tailor their own clothes. As for shoes, I just think everything should be unisex. It should just be a generic, universal sizing chart where anyone can find a shoe in a style that they like, and it doesn't have to have a specific gender. They're just shoes. You wear them on your feet. Why do they have to be male or female? I definitely feel like there can be a lot of room for improvement in sort of inclusive sizing and the way that it's displayed.
In the last few seasons, cross-dressing and genderless fashion has blown up. From Young Thug wearing skirts, to Kim Kardashian wearing Louis Vuitton men's, to brands like Telfar and Ecos Lata rising to popularity, there is an undeniable appetite for gender nonconforming fashion. Why? Hood by Air's Ian Isaiah weighs in.
Why was the gender conversation important?
It was really important because it wasn't spoke on by minorities and Black people. We've seen genderless for years in fashion. Rick Owens has been doing this for 20-something years. We've seen craziness in fashion before Hood by Air even started, but we've seen it all on white people. And it looked great. It inspired us. But we have not seen that in the Black culture. In the Black culture, it was still like, these Black fashions is crazy. Or like, Black people don't do stuff like this. This is a white look. This is white gays looks. This is white gay fashion. It wasn't a Black thing. To Black gays, it was like, oh, it was in sitcoms and like a joke in sitcoms that this flamboyant Black dude was this and that and loud and this, that, and the third. It was too show queen. And it wasn't looked at seriously in fashion. So it was really important to make sure that, like, oh, no, we're storming. We're storming with gangsters in skirts. We're storming with rappers wearing skirts, which freaked fashion out, which was crazy to me. I'm like, why are people freaking out about men in skirts? And it kind of started there. And then we kind of seen from fall... Our fall 14 show, HBA, Rocky did that show with us. And we put him in a neoprene skirt and like this neoprene jacket. Rocky, where's that look? I need that look back, by the way, if you hear this. We put him in this neoprene jacket and this skirt, and then the internet freaked out. And we were... To me, I thought that was the most normal look of the show. I thought he was, like, literally not even dressed for the show. I was like,
really?
We didn't even have time to style him. I'm like, to me, I was just like, that's not enough. He's the biggest artist we got on the show. Like, but everyone was just freaking out. They was just freaking out about Black rapper in a skirt. You know, 2-3 seasons after that, here goes Ricardo. And now Givenchy has men in skirts. And then, like, that's when the capitalism started. And then now we're casting Blacks to put in skirts. And then, like, that's how... streetwear and skirts started, this, that, and the third. At first, I was a little salty about it, but then I realized that that's what we're here for. We're here to make the statements. And if that's what it takes to get things to change, then that's what it gets to things. That's what we have. We knew that it wouldn't be able to start without the support of somebody that's a leader in that community, like Rocky. I'm a loud person. You know, I really believe in leadership. You put me in a room with 20 people, I'm not going to be a narcissist, but I will... help collect and get us all on one idea, one mind, one sound. And I could have done that without Rocky. We could have done that without Rocky, but they weren't ready to accept us like that. Ready. I'm not saying they wasn't going to, but they just weren't ready to accept us. That's why I really thank Rocky still to this day. The whole ASAP family, we all grew up together. I still thank them for this day because they were kind of the ones that helped on the hetero side, in my opinion, to collect those ignorant mind states that was happening and just bring it over so that we'll take it from there, even though I could have done it myself. But sometimes you do need support of friends and culture and family that you grew up with that understands and knows what's next and knows the power of what's next to help you join forces and, like, attack what it means to be genderless and what it means to walk in Soho 15 years ago in a skirt. And walk past gangsters, walk past skateboarders, walk past baby legends, Pharrell. Like, just walk past a bunch of baby legends in Soho 15 years ago and just be that Vogue.com for them in the streets or be that fashion that they see so that they can go home with those little ideas and go to work and see what happens from that.
What do you think genderless fashion is going to look like in the future?
It depends. What is genderless fashion going to look like in the future? The same. It's going to look the same. It's going to look the same. It's actually going to look the same.
Hopefully some more free minds.
Yeah, I think hopefully in the future it's more free-minded, meaning like you're wearing your mental as opposed to, you know, wearing a look. That's a cool idea, actually. But like, yeah, hopefully in the future genderless fashion is wearing your mind state. Great tweet.
Fashion communicates much more than our taste. It can tell us about society, and it can even help change it. Based on the stories our guests shared, it's clear that what we put on every day is really a complex expression of who we are. And with that, I turn it to you, the listener, to start thinking about your own identity. Whether you identify as a man, a woman, any other gender, or none, ask yourself where you learned your dress codes for gender. Who do they benefit? Who do they hurt? what would happen if you broke them, and why you even need a label. Fashioning Identity is produced by Sonia Manalili and written by me, Sachin Bola. Thank you to Jack Halberstam, Valerie Steele, Ian Isaiah, Shamir, Gian Delion, Ash Owens, Jackie O, and Mercy Kelly from the Hedrick Martin Institute, and Ian Alexander. On the next episode of Fashioning Identity, I'm looking at sexuality and examining the hardships and the triumphs of the LGBTQ community through the lens of fashion. If you like what you're hearing, subscribe to the series on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app.